And I gave the first talk there. And I remember just walking into this auditorium at Suntec City Convention Center, a huge auditorium. There's about 4,000 or 5,000 people there. It was one of the first really big talks I gave. And you know what sometimes happens? You think, this is dangerous. With so many people coming to your talk, it's very easy that you can get proud and think you're sort of, you know, the most enlightened monk in the whole world, and so many people come to see if you. That pride, their ego, was something I was very concerned about. I've seen that happen to other monks, nuns, teachers or whatever. And I always, when I walked in there, I always remembered the gratitude to my teacher, Ajahn Chah. And so much gratitude, I remembered that I'm not giving this talk. Ajahn Chah is. So if it's a good talk, Ajahn Chah gets all the praise. If it's a bad talk, Ajahn Chah gets the blame. And that was actually true. Because that's the teachers, the ones who bring you up, the ones who guide you, you know, they're the ones that you pay gratitude towards. And that was very helpful because it meant when I gave that talk, I was totally relaxed. I didn't care. I did care, but I didn't really worry whether it was going to be a good talk or a bad talk. You just gave it. And when you have that type of attitude, it's amazing. You're not critical. You have gratitude all the time. And it's the same when you have gratitude to all the people. They're uncountable, honestly. Thousands of them who made this place, looked after it, got it to the situation that it's in today. So when you look at each of the bricks here, I don't just look at the clay, the baked clay. Look at all the people who actually got onto those scaffolds and laid those bricks, the people who donated to make it happen, the people who clean them, the people who keep everything just working okay. It's a lot of work with a retreat center. And somebody once said to me, they said, it's like a hotel. They said, you treat it like a hotel. And I said, no, that doesn't sound right. Hotels are not personal. So this is the BSWA's retreat center. So we could sort of... I've been to other retreat centers and checked them out. You know how much they charge just to stay one night? Well, I don't know either. I was relying on you. Spirit Rock, how much? That's US as well. $130. And that is that with your own en suite?
Yes.
And that with jokes as well? No, it's a joke. That's a night, $130 a night. That's incredible. So what's $130 US in Aussie?
160,
yeah. And I don't want that. Do you want that? No, you just... They don't care whether you're rich or you're poor or homeless or whatever. It's just nice to offer this. This is an offering which we share between all of us. Whenever anything is needed, we get put it online and raise some money for it. You know, that is the most amazing thing in my monastic life, the gratitude you have to all incredible lay people. And sometimes, oh my goodness, how am I going to pay for this? And, you know, I take responsibility for it. But I haven't gone to jail yet, except for visiting. But it's amazing, and that's some of the things which you're really grateful for, and it really touches your heart when there is a need for something. And there's so many lay people, and they're just not rich. Person over here, person over there, they all come together. I was listening, and it was wonderful, that 70th birthday I had. 2.6 million Aussie dollars. Oh, that was really amazing. But it was very successful, and so the Buddhist Society of Victoria, which are building the next retreat centre, asked me, can I have another 70th birthday, please? There's so many people, a dollar here, a dollar there, and that's why I really sort of get inspired. Because it's something which is, they see in the place here, that's actually where we held the birthday here, and they see just, you know, what can be done when people get inspired We don't have target. Actually, we did have a target, but it was much less than that. That was just impossible. But that really touches my heart as well. That inspires me. That somehow or other, that what we're doing here, and all the volunteers working here, I think no one here gets paid. I think Annie gets paid something for doing the gardening, but not much, which is a pensioner anyway. But nothing, nothing more. It's amazing. Can you imagine a place which has got, and there are no actually paid workers here? That's brilliant. That's beautiful. That's the old tradition, that people give whatever they can. But one thing I know, that when people do give whatever they can, sometimes you don't get the best job completed, but you get the kindest job completed. Years and years and years ago, I remember when Ajahn Bhumali came here, and because I was the boss, he was only a novice at the time, and I got him to do a little bit of stonework in the monastery. He'd never done any building before in his life. He was an engineer, one of those engineers, electrical engineer, who just tells other people what to do. But now I told him, just make this. He'd never done any stonework before, and he gave it a try. It wasn't the best, but it's still there. That's where you learn. And I always remember that with Ajahn Chah. No matter what you do, they'd always encourage you, even though it was a mess. I sometimes wonder if he really, really did keep his five precepts, especially the number four about not telling fibs. Because when he said, oh, there's a lovely piece of work you've done there, you know, like young Mark me, and I looked at that piece of work. Do you need to confess one of the offences you've just broken? But I love that because, oh, it's a beautiful sound. Before anyone complains, have any of you never had your mobile phone go off during a talk?
Off.
Never happened to you. I can put my hand up, it's never happened to me. Of course it happens. So that's a nice thing. Life is meant to be perfect, but life, when it goes wrong, that's actually when we learn. And that's part of what we learn in a retreat like this. When your meditation doesn't go well, when you don't sleep at night, you get really fed up, what do you learn? You learn to say, everything will change. It won't last. It will usually get worse. And when I say things like that, people laugh. I don't know why, because it's true. But it's the journey. It's just so much fun and happiness, and you learn so much. And often people, you know, they keep on asking, what do we do when we get home? What are you talking about? This is your home. Why are we talking about the real world? What are you talking about? This is the real world. This is more real than in town. In town, you've got sort of scents, and you've got flashing lights, things advertising, trying to get you to buy this. And you go home, and you just... Do you actually go home where you just... Oh, I've got access to my internet. And just... see what you can download, see what you can see. Is that real? So sometimes I tell people that this is the real world. It's much more real. You've got nothing covering the reality of life. The reality of life is just... things do decay. They do go wrong. We clean them up. They still go wrong. We try and do our very best. But they still go wrong. We exercise, we still get sick. So a lot of times, then we realise, oh, we just accept life. We try and make it the best we can, but we can't ever succeed in making it perfect. This is not a perfect world. And you can't make it perfect. You can make it better. One of the nicest ways to make it better is to be kinder. Not to cure things, but to care for them. And that was such a beautiful little teaching given to a doctor, and that doctor, when he learnt that trying to cure all his patients was not the way he's going to survive in this world, because he'd fail many times. How many times have you failed? But how many times when you've cared do you realise you can't fail? Just caring for people, being with them, laughing with them, crying with them, and that means that care is by far the most powerful way to live in this life and create a lot of peace, happiness and wisdom as well. And of course that care is caring for your own body, looking after it, and caring for other people, not by intruding on them, but giving them space, giving them smiles. And caring for others just with your wisdom and understanding, giving everyone space. Space to be. Just like all the animals who live in Jhana Grove here, all the kangaroos, we gave them space to be, but I made sure that that space to be is not in the central area around the grass lawn, around the stupas. I got into big trouble for that because people said, yeah, this is not England. You put grass lawns around the stupas, the kangaroos will get in there and eat them. And when they said that, it was like a personal challenge. I said, no, it's me against the kangaroos. And I couldn't believe those kangaroos just in the hot weather when there's no grass around. And they see the green grass around the stupas. And my goodness, it's amazing what they do to actually to get in there. And even from the upper cottages, that staircase which goes down. You know, we've got a gate over there now. Because I couldn't believe this. The kangaroos would stand on top and in one leap go right down to the bottom. We caught it on this video camera at night. Oh, those kangaroos were amazing. But anyway, one of the other reasons is to make sure there's, you know, you don't get, in that time of the year, the kangaroos have these little ticks. Oh no, we don't want you to have those ticks. Because they're not evil, they're not bad, and the monks get them all the time and just go scratching and scratching and scratching. It's not good to scratch them, but you can't really help it. They don't do any harm, poor little ticks. But anyway, because of that, just we try and be kind. But putting a little gate around there, it's just like putting the gate of like precepts and little rules for the jhana grove when you're here. Because that protects things, that protects you. Sometimes people feel that all those precepts and stuff is to make life more difficult for you. It's not, it's to make life more easy for you. Give you protection. And the story behind that, because I have to tell stories, that there was these two Thai monks a long time ago, and they went to somebody's house for their lunch. And while they were waiting for their lunch to be cooked and served, they were in this little room, and there was an aquarium in there. And in the aquarium was some fish. And one of the monks said, that's really cool to put fish in an aquarium in somebody's house. Because it's like putting a fish in a prison. What crime did the fish do to be put in that little box? So all they can do is swim backwards and forwards, and they can't have the freedom to swim wherever they want. So that is unfair. And the senior monk said, he don't understand. He said, those fish in the aquarium, they are so much more free than the fish swimming in the lakes and the ponds. Especially in Thailand. Because the reason is, if a fish is in a lake or a pond, a river in Thailand, oh, there's a great danger. The danger of fishermen. And that danger of fishermen, every time they see a nice little worm, their lunch come along. They don't know whether that worm is safe or not because they've seen many of their friends, these fish in the lakes and the dams, many of their friends, they saw them taking a nice juicy worm and then whoop, and they go out of their life forever, never see them again. Now imagine if you were that fish. You see many of your friends disappear. You don't know what you're going to eat next. Imagine you're at the dining room up there and suddenly you had a nice little sort of noodle or something and you're about to put it in your mouth, whoop, right through the ceiling and you don't know where you got it. That would make you actually paranoid. That would make you just so anxious that you couldn't enjoy your food. You'd have anxiety complex every time. And you'd be so scared, it looks really nice, but can I take it? Should I not take it? If you think you have anxiety already, you don't know what a fish is like. They're really anxious. But Have you ever seen a fisherman drop a line into somebody's aquarium? Of course not. So those fish in the aquarium are so they can relax. And of course, sometimes in the aquarium, sometimes there's no food to eat at all. There's droughts and there's scarcity of food. Does that ever happen in an aquarium? In an aquarium, the fish always have something to eat. Just like being a monk. Here, we can't go here, we can't go there to get our food. We get lovely food every day, brought to our monastery, just like the fish. And in an aquarium, they have it temperature controlled all the time. So I must meet some of those fish in the lakes, especially you see places like UK. Some of that water is freezing cold. They've got ice in it. And what do you think those fish do? Can they put on a beanie like I do? Can they have like aircon? No, they just have to endure. And sometimes it's really warm. But no, in an aquarium, it's always the right temperature all the time. And so, also, what else? Oh yeah, healthcare. Some people can't afford healthcare. Oh, it's just too hard to get. Sometimes, what doctors say, sometimes all those hospitals are just overloaded with patients. But if you're a fish in an aquarium, you have free healthcare. If something's wrong with you, your owner gets some expert there to find out what's wrong and heals you. So you have free healthcare. Well, you also get droughts over in big waterways and systems. But you never have a drought in the aquarium. Oh, and lastly, yeah. You know, in some places these days, it's very rough. Even some parts of Perth can be very rough and dangerous. But in an aquarium, the owner never puts big fish who eat small fish in the same aquarium. They make sure that all the fish in your aquarium are just non-violent, the same size or something, so they don't eat one another. But in some of those lakes and rivers in Sri Lanka, oh, there's some little creeks I wouldn't want to go up. There's some little ponds that the fish will be crazy to go in there. Get eaten up by the bigger fish. So many of the fish in the wild there must be very afraid of other bigger fish eating them. But the fish in the aquarium, they can swim around happy and free and at peace. So there's so many freedoms by being a fish in an aquarium. You're free from fishermen, you are free from bigger fish harassing you, you're free from hunger, you get really nice food, you're free from drought, you're free from what else is it? Free from illness because you get free healthcare. You get so much good stuff in there. So if you were a fish, which place would you like to live? An aquarium or out there in the wild? But if it's in an aquarium, that's like living in the five precepts. You're safe from many dangers. You don't have to worry about so much. And people say, well, you can't go to the pub, you can't go here, you can't go there, you can't do this, you can't do that. Oh, crikey. But you're free from so many dangers. That's why we have precepts. So that monk who said that was really smart. Really, that's good. Living in an aquarium where you're protected, you lose a lot of freedoms, but the biggest freedom which you gain is the freedom from danger, which causes so much worry and concern and anxiety. That's why we have this places like this. We don't force people to keep their precepts. Here are the precepts. Value them, enjoy them. The same way you don't force your mind to be free from desires. It's crazy, wasn't it? That's what life is all about, desires. It's true, but peace is all about the freedom from desires, the calmness, the stillness. And you notice that when you have a retreat center, we always try and make it in the middle of a beautiful part of nature. We don't want to change that nature. Even though in that nature there's lots of flies, there's bugs, all sorts of snakes and stuff, but that's part of life. We want to actually live at peace with life rather than controlling life and making it too sort of safe. So we look at this place, we don't want to change it, we just enjoy it and appreciate it. The same way when you meditate, there are all sorts of bugs and dangerous animals lurking in your mind, ready to pounce on you and eat away your happiness, whatever. But those animals in your mind, we learn to make peace with them. You find when you make peace with them, the animals never harm you. So weird, but so true. Oh, over here people are scared of snakes. We used to see so many more snakes in Thailand in those jungles. And those snakes, you know, they do stupid things sometimes. I remember this time I was doing the chanting of the Patimokkha. And I was doing the chanting, and one of the monks who was sitting in front of me, you know, all had to come together to listen to the Patimokkha chant. He had his hands up like this, and then I noticed another head appear on his back. A snake. And I stopped chanting. It was one of those ridiculous moments. Again, it would be wonderful if he could have it filmed or something. And the monk could see from the corner of his eye, because I stopped chanting, I could see the snake in him perfectly. And so he saw out of the corner of his eye, so he turned to see the snake, and the snake turned to see him. They were eyeballing one another. And they had no ill will in their minds towards one another, but he was like, now what do we do? And so he very, very gently, with his robe, just let it fall, so gently, very sweet. And then it fell off, and the snake just went down on the ground, and just crawled slowly away. Didn't run away. It just crawls slowly away. It's things like that which teach you that when you have any dangers or problems in your mind, what do? You don't chase it away. Otherwise, it's like the snake. It gets scared, and you get scared, and you bite one another and get into all sorts of trouble. So instead of doing things like that, overreacting, which is, oh, it's just a thought comes in, a bit of negativity, a bit of tiredness, a bit of ill will or whatever. It's just a little bit of ill will. It's not mine. It comes by itself. I didn't invite it in. And it can go by itself. Bye-bye. But without any force or aggression. And that's the sort of stuff which makes it very easy to meditate. You don't always get snakes in your mind. The equivalent of snakes, a lot of times, is just beautiful animals in the mind. And sometimes, well, I never saw this because I was facing the other way, but somebody saw, what was it, the blue wren? Yeah, the other day, I was just watching them when they were doing the interview. And they were paying no attention to me. That wasn't the wren. It's okay. It's beautiful. So that, what does that teach you? It teaches whatever's really beautiful, it just grabs your attention. If you get beautiful states of mind, like nimittas, so what should I do now? You can't stop just watching it because it draws you in. Because it's gorgeous. And you just notice, you notice so much more beauty when you're peaceful. And that's why you have a much more wonderful time. So little by little, we learn how to be peaceful. We learn how to have gratitude. And how just, in a place like this, that you're not here to control anything. You're here to enjoy this moment. See what happens when you do let go. No control. And gratitude is part of that. It's not perfect, but thank you so much. Thank you for all of the laughter you gave to my jokes. That was really a great sacrifice of yours, because I know that many of those jokes weren't funny, but you laughed anyway, so thank you. And all the other peace and good fun we have. And it is a little community over here, it always is. And so, you know, if you, those people you've been sharing your cottages with, yeah, they may have done some wrong things, but you know, you've done some wrong things as well. And it's easy to see other people's wrong things at first, but then you see, oh yeah, I'm just as bad. And you're not as bad, you're just as usual. And little by little, we have some friendships, some good friendships, a Kalyanamitta, which is important. So all the people you've got to know here, keep in touch if you can. And maybe just every now and again, come on a self-retreat together so you don't feel afraid on the self-retreats. It was wonderful just sitting out there on the floor listening to you all. That's great. Gives me some feedback. That's the trouble with being senior. People actually don't tell you everything, they just tell you what they think you need to hear. But anyway, so it's great that you have learned so much, and if you think, oh, this is the worst retreat ever, don't worry. There's a worse retreat coming next time. Now, don't worry, because you'll find out you get so much benefits here. And sometimes those benefits, you don't realize how powerful they are until you go out there into the world. And so you realize, wow, this is great coming here. And share it out with other people. Don't try and be an evangelist and tell people, oh, this is the only place to go. Just, they will see. If it's worth something, they'll appreciate it. Happy to see you home, but also happy to find out why you're so peaceful, why you're so relaxed. In our world, we always want to let go of stress, and you can take medication for it. I don't really trust that. But coming to a place like this and being accepted, accepting who you are with all your faults, and accepting other people as they are, making peace with life rather than trying to make war, caring for one another and for yourself rather than trying to cure things. It's amazing how powerful that can be. So, okay. It's now just gone 8:45. We're going to have a toilet break now, if you want to. You don't have to. If you don't want to go, you don't have to. This is non-compulsory. And then afterwards, you come back, and we'll do a metta meditation, and also a blessing, a special blessing to do at the very, very end. Okay. So what we're going to do now is we're going to do a little guided meditation. The guided meditation is on loving kindness. I do this every year, or twice a year, or I don't know, many times a year. And the first time I did it, you know, it was really powerful. Still powerful, but it's a way of getting us to really develop strong feelings of compassion, and then that goes into kindness. And that goes into beautiful peace and bliss as we spread some of that kindness to ourselves. And as we're doing this, that it's based on a principle that if you're going to light a fire, like loving kindness, metta, is like a fire, warm fire, which doesn't destroy, but which warms and heals. But in order to light a fire, you can't get a match and put it against a wet, sappy log and expect it to burst into flame. First of all, you've got to build up the heat in that fire. So on a match you put paper underneath it, or on top of it, and then the paper takes the flame very easily. Then from the paper you put little twigs on, and from twigs bigger sticks, and bigger sticks to little logs, and from little logs to bigger logs. And once that fire is really strong, you can put on the wettest, sappiest of logs, and you find those wet, sappy logs, they dry out and they can also take the flame. And they also start burning. And that's the story, like some of the people which you hate, to be honest. You've had some very difficult times with. And after a while, your loving kindness is so strong that even those beings, they just can't resist you. Or they can't resist your loving kindness. And after a while, there's people you thought you could never feel good feelings for. You do. And it just gets stronger and stronger. If you really want to do it deeply, I don't usually don't go that far, usually you want to do it deeply. Once you get this beautiful feeling of loving kindness, may all beings be happy and well, may just the happiness and well-being just go everywhere, including inside of you. I just, for want of a better word, I call it disembodied loving kindness. It's loving kindness without sort of even an object to go on, it's just there. And anything which comes within its range gets warmed. And that loving kindness, you know, to me, it's a beautiful limiter. It's beautiful golden. I don't know why it's golden. Other people say it's the same, but that's the colour which it always happens to me. Beautiful gold, powerful, very nice. And you just start blissing out in your loving kindness. And anyone who comes close, zap. You get zapped by the loving kindness. Zap, 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 zap. Whatever. It's good fun. And it's also a beautiful limiter. Okay, so let's get going, 9 o'clock. It's supposed to go to 9:45, isn't it? Yeah, okay. We're going to go to 9:40 because at the very end there's a little chart I want to do for somebody else. So we're sitting here. And just like every meditation, when you close your eyes, please make sure that your body is comfortable. You can't have loving kindness to your own machine, this body here. How can you ever spread loving kindness to anything else? So I get this vehicle as comfortable as I can. So just getting your body comfy. Mine is still not comfy. I'm going to spend a few more seconds with it. Once you think your body is comfortable, close your eyes and refine the comfort. So I'm making sure that my legs, first of all, are in a good position. I don't want to have to move during the meditation, but if I have to, then I will. I just work with my body because I care for my body. I have loving kindness towards my body. Starting with my feet. Aware of my feet. The feelings in them. And if for some reason you can't be aware of your feet, just wiggle your toes. Move them. And you can feel them. You get to be very aware of what toes feel like. So if they're ever sick or bruised or broken, you can feel that. And you can feel just how to relax them and make them very peaceful. I feel the rest of my foot. I'm actually aware of just the feelings in the foot. Just like that simile this morning of watching the screen of those in-flight safety videos on aircraft. You tend to zoom in onto that area which you're focusing on. So I'm zooming into my feet now. So I'm aware of those feet. And hardly anything else. Really relaxing them. And I move up my feet to my ankles, making sure that they too are at ease. My ankles up to my calves, or your shins, wherever you can get a feeling, a sensation there. Know it. And that will check that everything is okay there. That everything is in its right place. And from the shins you go up to your knees. How do your knees feel? If there's any ache or pain, maybe move the legs and lessen the tension which is in your knees. And sometimes you've been doing a lot of meditation Sometimes, like what I'm doing now, is I'm imagining my knees. And imagine I'm sinking into a soft satin pillow so they get more relaxed. Just imagining that they are opening out, relaxing, easing off. Just that imagination helps relax the knees more deeply. And then you go up your thighs, feeling the skin, the muscles, even the bones. Feeling everything just relax to the max. When it does relax, you notice that special feeling which indicates that your legs, from the thighs to the toes, they've been cared for briefly, just for 2 or 3 minutes. And they react by being at ease. And they're very unlikely to be a trouble for you. You go to your butt, feeling the pressure of your body on these muscles. And I make sure, because I wear robes, sometimes those robes, a fold of the robes, cuts into the flesh. I make sure that my robes are smooth under my butt. It lessens a lot of minor irritation, which is so easy to fix. And after relaxing everything in my butt, I go to my waist. How does your waist feel? And sometimes, you know, it's reasonably comfortable. You try moving it this way, then moving it that way, just to make sure that you know what really is the most comfortable position for you to begin with. And then once my waist is comfortable, it's not perfectly comfortable. See, I've got my belt on a bit too tight. Look at this in it. Then you go up your back. As I go up my back, I feel I need to stretch it. Good stretch. Oh, that's better. When you're mindfully relaxing your body, you soon become very skilled at knowing what to do and how to do it to make your body more comfortable. So you have less stress inside your body. And I get to my shoulders. My shoulders, I found one of the best methods of relaxing shoulders is actually to imagine both sides of the top of the spine, that these strings called the shoulder muscles, a whole bunch of them either side. And I imagine they're being pulled apart, stretched, otherwise known as stress, on both sides. I imagine simply letting go. What would happen if I let go of pulling these things apart and let them relax to a normal shape? No tension at all. And when I imagine that, the shoulder blades actually do relax and get loose. And that would always mean that I have a comfortable meditation. But I also I remember the front of the body as well, or rather the torso with all the organs and stuff inside. And when I sort of scan through that, if there's any part of my intestines, colon, or whatever, if I feel there's a bit of tightness and tension, which there is because I had my breakfast a short time ago, I can feel a bit of pressure down there. I'm just kind to it. It's like, sometimes I do this really, but often I just imagine like stroking those intestines. just like you would stroke a cat or a dog, kindly. Because when I give my body kindness, it always relaxes and becomes more peaceful. So that's what I'm doing to my intestines. You go up to your stomach, that feels in pretty good shape. And then to your lungs, your heart, kidneys and whatever. If you find any place which is hurting or tight, under stress, just go to that area of the body, zoom in. Give this wonderful kindness so everything tends to expand. As it expands, the pain, the ache, the tightness gets less. You start to feel better. That's how many times I've used this method to overcome things like food poisoning. Any tightness, stress in the body or in the lungs with hay fever, in the throat. But also go down from the shoulders, down the arms, making sure the elbows are comfortable and the hands are also comfortable. How do your hands feel right now? Can you make them more relaxed by moving them? Getting them into a better posture. Once my hands and arms are comfortable, my body is comfortable. It's incredible, from the neck down I've relaxed all these parts of my body. And I feel really at ease. But then from the throat I go to my face, noticing that your face displays your emotions. So what is it like around your eyes now? Are those muscles screwed tight? What's it like around the mouth or around the forehead? What do you need to do to relax those muscles? So the forehead is loose. Muscles around the eyes are also loose. They're not screwed down tight. And around the mouth, that is also free of tension. And if you can, see if you can imagine smiling. A little smile makes the meditation easier. And then you've relaxed your whole body, from toes to the top of the head. But now you feel it as just one thing, like all united together. When I do this, it's like you've just been in a bathtub, or you've been had a full massage, a good one, or you just relax so much you can hardly feel an ache or a pain in your body at all. Doing what I just said, it's a marvellous way to have a good night's sleep. Do that in bed before you go to sleep. Because your body is really deeply relaxed. But in meditation we also notice that the more the body is relaxed, the more delightful that feeling is. It's a pleasure. The pleasure of deep relaxation. It feels good. And I enjoy that. So I linger there for a minute or two. I always suggest to meditators, if you can feel the joy of bodily relaxation, when things feel free and at ease, it's a special type of joy. And once you notice that pleasure, you may also notice the state of relaxation goes deeper. But more than that, you're beginning to train yourself with mindfulness, kindness, and joy. Now we go inside. How peaceful are you? What makes you more peaceful? Teach us to develop some quietness, stillness, just in this moment. When you renounce the past, you don't pick up the future. You've only got the present moment to deal with. That's called simplifying, downsizing, being more free. Now to get into the loving kindness, that is some visualizations of compassion, first of all. I like cats. So I imagine a cat at the beginning of my precursor to meditation. I do a visualization of a cat. If you prefer to visualize a dog, a little puppy, maybe your puppy. It could be a teddy bear, an animal, a friend, whatever. I imagine just walking, maybe in the forest, and I hear the sound of a little kitten. I can hear that sound, I'm not quite sure what it is. But in this visualization, imagination exercise, I recognize it's a kitten, abandoned, no mother. I don't know why, it's alone. I know how harsh the world can be to small, tiny people with no one to care or protect you. So when I hear that sound, which sounds like a little kitten, I turn my ears in its direction and I follow the sound to see where it comes from. And eventually I see in a dark corner of some old building, in a dark corner, I can see these two eyes looking at me. They're kitten eyes. I can see the fear and the pain in this little being's eyes. I can recognize it. That poor little being is terrified, but also hopeful. This big being in a brown robe and bald head has found it. This being can be kind to her, can look after her, protect her. She needs that protection and kindness so much. She must be hurting, not just physically, but emotionally, being alone, not knowing who to trust. So as I see its eyes, I start chanting verses of kindness towards that little being. Dear being, the door of my heart is open to you. I will never harm you. Please give me the opportunity to care for you, look after you, nurture you. And as I do this, I don't just say the words, I feel them. I focus my mind on them. And I send these words to that imaginary being. I care for you. Please let me look after you. I will never harm you. I've got access to all sorts of wonderful people who can help me find some food for you, whatever you want to eat. And as I say these words, I imagine those eyes getting softer, more accepting. So I extend my open hand slowly into that corner, and I notice that head start to come out of the darkness. See, it is a little kitten, a little tabby kitten. See its fur, its eyes, and its little nose, and then its ears. As I hold my hand out to it, it's still afraid. I let it sniff me. Dear little kitten, please let me care for you. And I touch it. And this little kitten recoils a little bit because it's afraid. But soon it realizes this doesn't harm it, it doesn't hurt it. And little by little my hand gets closer to it. Until it comes out from the darkness, it's building up trust towards me. And as it comes out from the darkness, I see that kittens' furs are usually really clean. I can see all this dark, clotted stuff, dark red stuff on it. A poor little kitten has trusted so many other beings or people in the past. It's just been hit and wounded. There's dried blood on its fur. And so much compassion. I put my hand underneath it very, very softly and pick it up. It trusts me because it has to. And as I very slowly bring it towards me, to my chest, that's where my heart is. I bring it closer towards me and I warm it with my warmth. I hold it so gently because it must be so tender. And I stroke it very, very softly. And it closes its eyes. It trusts me that much now. Dear little kitten, I will feed you. I will protect you, keep you warm, make sure those wounds heal. Make sure that tiny, tiny little body is fattened up. Making sure that you can face this world. This world is dangerous, but there's also a lot of fun in it as well. To see you play around like every other little kitten. To enjoy your life. And to know the power of love. Dear little kitten, the door of my heart is fully open to you. I don't ask anything of you except for the privilege to care for you. I notice this little kitten in my arms is purring now. I don't know if that means it's asleep or awake, but I know it's probably more relaxed than it's ever been in its short life so far. And I imagine because it's next to my heart, I imagine my heart in my chest starting to radiate out this warmth of loving kindness towards this little being on my chest. I vow to look after it, and my goodness, I will. I will spoil it, little kitten. And I warm it with my loving kindness. And I can actually feel the energy of my heart. I can really feel it now. This is no longer imagination, this is real. Just pouring through my chest. I can feel that part of the chest tingling. And this loving kindness energy going on to this imaginary kitten. From the tip of its tail to the tip of its paws, to every end of every whisker, the tips of its ears and its head. May you be happy and well, little kid. I care for you. And then when that loving kindness is really very warm, then I transfer the image from a little kitten to someone I know, a real person who may be in difficulty. And I notice that even grown-up human beings, that little kitten, they share so much. They all need a good friend, a Kalyanamitta, kindness, warmth, forgiveness. Someone who you know cares about you. My friend. So I imagine as if they're standing here. The door of my heart is open to you. You may say things which irritate others, but I won't allow them to irritate me. If there's anything you need, anything I can do, please give me the privilege, not the burden, of helping and caring for you. And I give this beautiful loving kindness to one of these beings who's very close to me in this world. May you be happy and well. May your mind know the stillness of deep meditation. May you see the wisdom which is so obvious in those deep meditations. May you be free, unconcerned with physical illnesses, just understanding just why people do and say things which can be harmful, and never get angry at them. My dear friend, may you be at peace, may you be wise, may you be kind as well. And without opening your eyes, you imagine all the people in this room, all the people you've shared this last week with, and a bit more. There's so much like you. And they need kindness. Sometimes we all feel afraid and we shrink back into some so-called safe corner of the world. We need each other. So these are good people here. My dear friends, fellow meditators, may you really be happy and well. I really hope that you've had some wonderful meditation. And your illnesses, sicknesses get lessened. Ill will gets overcome by wisdom. Little by little, may you be free. So at peace, so happy, you don't need any desire fulfilled at all. And you can imagine just invisible arms coming out from your side and going around everybody in this room and hugging them, bringing them in, never forcing them out. May all beings in this room feel my kindness. You send it to them, they send it to you, we share it all together. All beings in this room, this wonderful loving kindness is metta. I care for you. May you be at peace and free. May you have the very, very best in your life. It's my privilege to be able to give you even a small amount. Please let me give you that small amount. And then, having given this loving kindness to everybody in this room, imagine this loving kindness from all of us like a big golden light getting so strong, the walls and roof cannot enclose it anymore, cannot keep it in, it bursts out. It's this beautiful feeling, energy, light of loving kindness goes out from this building to all the other beings here in Jhana Grove. The kangaroos, the birds in here, the eagle, the cockatoos, little blue wrens, the ants and the other things which crawl on the ground. May all beings in this compound be happy and well. We share this place with you freely, openly. May you have joy and peace. May you feel safe with us human beings, meditators in your midst. May you realize we'll never harm you or hurt you. We're here to care. As this loving kindness goes even further, it goes further up the road to Karnet Prison Farm, to all of the inmates as well as those who are looking after them and caring for them, working there. May all beings there realize you're much, much more than the crime for which we're put in that jail. You're human beings. There's so much goodness and kindness inside of you. We send you our kindness so you can recognize your own power. May all beings at Karnet Prison Farm be at peace and happy. May all beings, as you go westward in Bodhinyana Monastery, all you monks, anagarikas, novices, visitors, all you animals there, the possums and echidnas and kangaroos and birds, I know you, see you every day sometimes. Little Joey is now in the mummy's pouches, peeking out for the first time at this strange species with bald heads. We care for one another. May you all be happy and well. May you all be at peace and feel safe and enjoy your day at Bodhinyana Monastery. As you send this loving kindness further afield to all the monks over in Hermit's Hill, far beyond to all the people in Serpentine. As you imagine this golden light growing wider and wider, as it starts warming the places in Perth and in Mandurah and Bunbury, and all the places in between. Many of the beings there, millions of beings, you don't know me, you don't know us. We can still receive our kindness and our warmth, our well-wishing, as it goes to all the hospitals where people are so afraid and dying and sick and hurting. To all the medical staff who do such amazing jobs, thank you. Over to the houses, to the schools, the shopping centres, everywhere. As your loving kindness goes to every corner and suburb and in Perth, it goes even wider to all the beings in Western Australia, the far north, the deep south. May all beings receive our loving kindness and well-wishing. It is a power, and the more you receive, the more it grows inside of us, and the more you have to give. May all beings be free from suffering, free from fear, free from just a feeling of hopelessness, knowing that people care about you, even people you've never met, we still care. And by spreading loving kindness over the whole of Western Australia, you have spread it to many of the people you live with, you love, your family, your friends, your work colleagues. May you all be well and happy. Not distinguishing between someone who's very close to you and someone who's just not even known to you. May you all be at peace and healthy and feel in this moment the joy which we're sending to you. And then you expand that loving kindness way beyond the territorial limits of Western Australia to South Australia, Central Australia. Actually, there's no Central Australia, but Northern Territory, over to the East Coast, Queensland. You've got family over there, and New South Wales, and Victoria, and Tassie, over to New Zealand. Because once you get this loving kindness strong and imagine it like a big golden light, it travels everywhere. You can't stop it. It goes way beyond Australia, south to Antarctica, north to Indonesia, Malaysia, Singapore, Thailand, over to Burma and India, over north to China, to Hong Kong, Korea, Japan, Russia, over to Europe, to Africa, to South, so to the Middle East. Can't be stopped. As it goes out through the whole world, connecting like a golden warm blanket, healing even economic, environmental disasters. Warming people's hearts, realizing that what we need most of all is kindness and peace and safety. May the whole world be happy and well. The whole world be free from suffering. Never think this can't be achieved. The more you give, the more you see it happening. And just linger there for a while with this feeling, emotion, force of loving kindness over the whole world without distinction. Now remember, you've left someone out. You. Now imagine you're standing in front of a big mirror, and you look at that mirror and you see you, the being who goes by your name. You look at that being. He worked so hard over the last 9 days as a meditator, as a coordinator, as a nun, as a monk, whatever your job has been, even if it's been one who is helping here, helping there, give yourself kindness, forgiveness, peace. I know all of you, you've all tried so hard, given so much, sacrificed such a great deal. You look at yourself with these beautiful warm eyes. I care for me. May I be happy and well. May I never need to feel afraid, knowing how many friends and loved ones I have. And you imagine there's two arms coming out from your side and going around you, bringing yourself closer and never being afraid of anything about yourself. Making peace with yourself, kindness, this beautiful warmth. Just like a mother loves her only child, will sacrifice her life for her child. That's how you regard yourself. May I be free. May I be well. May I be at peace. This beautiful loving kindness goes up and down your own body. You may find it difficult to do at the beginning, but now you've given that loving kindness to so many. And it's grown so warm. It's not that hard to give it to yourself. You deserve it. I'll pause for a minute. Now it's coming close to the end of this meditation. So imagine all that beautiful golden light of loving kindness which you've enveloped the whole world. Imagine bringing that light in, allowing it to come back inside of you, but keeping the warmth out there, the light of loving kindness. Imagine it coming back into Australia, coming back into Perth, into Serpentine, as it contracts and comes inwards. Imagine it coming into this hall at Jhana Grove. Imagine it coming into your body, into your heart, until it's like an intense ball of concentrated golden light, powerful, but small. And imagine it hovering over your heart, which you now imagine, visualize like a white, pure lotus, fully open. Loving kindness, a ball of intense power, hovers over that open white lotus. And the lotus leaves close over it gently, purely, to protect that for another time. Now I'm going to give you the chant for you of loving kindness. It's more like a blessing, sorry. Sabaroga Winimuto Sabasanta Pawajito Sabawera Matigando Nibuto Chatuangboa Sabiti o iwachantu Sabarogo inasatu mate Bhavan vantarayo Sukhiti gayu gopava apiva Danhasi litsanicha utapachalino chataro dhabbavatanti ayuvano sukhan palang sadhu. Sadhu, sadhu. Okay. Now, please stay put for just another 5 minutes, if you will. Because for those of you who don't know, there was some news yesterday And I think, interesting to see how many people do know. I've been trying to keep it quiet, simply because I don't want it to disrupt the retreat. But one of our first bhikkhunis here, Ajahn Wayama, she has been sick for many years, and she actually passed away yesterday in the afternoon. So we've tried to keep it a secret. How many of you knew? Okay, sorry?
Because on the board.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. I don't look on the board. Yeah, anyway. So she passed away. She was our first, one of the first nuns here, and the first bhikkhu, the first person who stayed at Dharamsala. And I must admit, that first year, she really did it tough. She made me look like a teddy bear, how tough she was. And it was amazing to know the sacrifice she did over all those years. And because she just passed away just yesterday, peacefully, I was told by Ajahn Seri. And so we're going to be doing something for her, but we're just discussing what to do. But I think something I can do, I can use some of my authority. We're supposed to always go through committees these days. But I was just saying that next Sunday afternoon, if it's okay, for those of you who want to do a little service to remember her, maybe a big service, a small service, just see what happens. Next Sunday afternoon at Nolamara, Leha, 3 p.m., I'm supposed to be giving a sutta class over there, but I think it'd be nice to do a little ceremony for her, a remembrance ceremony for Ajahn Wayama. Again, this is just really suggestions, but I think I can probably get that through operations manager and committee. What do you reckon?
Yeah,
okay. So what's happened is a couple of people here are going over to Patachara Hermitage this afternoon. 2:30, isn't it? Yeah, and so please, that's not a demand, and never do demands. That's an offer, if they want to do that, if you want to do that, on Sunday, next Sunday, week today at 3 p.m. in Nolamara Main Hall. That'd be great. But there may be other things happening as well, so we're just getting things organised. So we'll see what happens. But in the meantime, we'll give a nice little blessing for Ajahn Wayama. And it's usually, you know, the chant we usually do, we did one of these chants on last Friday evening. We knew what was happening at the monastery. We tried to keep it quiet. I think we did pretty okay there. Gave her the loving kindness sutta. We do that in Pali. Karaniyamata. This is for Ajahn Wayama.
Karaniyamata kusalena yantang santang padang abhisamecha sako uju chasuhu ju chasuacho chasamudu anati mani santu sako chasubaro cha apakicho cha salahukau tisantindriyo cha nipako cha apagabo kulesu ananugido nacha kudang samachare kinshi yena winyu pareyo pavadeyo sukhino wa kemino hontu sabe sata bhavantu sukhitata ye ke chipanabu tatita sawa tawarawa anawasesa digawa ye mahantawa majima rasaka anukatula ditawa ye chadita ye chadure vasanti avidure putta vasa pavesiva sabbe sata bhavantu sukhitata na paro pava nikubeta natima yeta kata china kinshibaya vasana pati kasanya nanya manya sadukha michaya mata yataniya putta ayusa eka putta manurake evam pisa babu desu mana sambhavaye aparimana metan shasabalo kasming mana sambhavaye aparimana udhangadu chatiriyan shasa padhangavevang asapata titanshava nisinova sayanova yavata sovigata mido etang satin aditya brahma meta viharang idamahuditi chanupagama silava dasanena sampano kame suvine yagedang nahija tukabaseya punaretiti. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And you know, personally, I've got a lot to owe to Ajahn Wayama, and also because I just spent the last 9 days teaching, and giving the Dhamma is one of the highest merits you can give. So I hereby sincerely dedicate the merits of this retreat, which I've done anyway, to Ajahn Wayama. Very good. Okay. It's always a sad time, ending a retreat. But nevertheless, there's always another one coming in a venue close to you soon. Excellent. Okay, that's it, folks.